The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. I'm so glad you could join me on this happy Monday. If you'd like to join me on the program, it's 303-873-1935, 303-873-1935. It is, of course, the program where we typically take your calls and answer your questions about the things you care the most about. We talk about God and the historical Jesus. We talk about the Bible. We talk about world views and world religions. We talk about history, prophecy. We talk about current events. And, of course, in the current category, many people were hoping for a ceasefire in the Middle East. Now, and I understand the deep, deep desire for the hostilities to stop. And one of the things that this brings up, this is the what's called the fasting month of Ramadan, and it starts today. It literally started when the moon was seen in Mecca. And so it begins the month of fasting. And so, as you can imagine, many people were calling for a ceasefire. Israel understands that it is with great difficulty that they're trying to conduct a war, that they are trying to win that war, and they're trying to eliminate the enemy. The current president has said that he thinks that that Israel's tactics or methodology is doing more harm than good for Israel. And that's an open question. But to make a long story short, the president of, or I should say the prime minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has made it clear that he is going to prosecute the war and he's going to end the war. And of course, Israel is preparing for possible unrest in Jerusalem, as well as Judea and Samaria and other areas like the West Bank. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about Ramadan and what that means. And again, Muslims gathered for prayer at Al-Aqsa, which is the Temple Mount, and on Sunday evening. And Israel repeated its pledge that it will allow Muslims from the Palestinian areas to go there and pray. And in an interview with MSNBC, President Joe Biden said Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu has a right to defend Israel and pursue Hamas, but has to take into account the plight of Gaza's citizens. The president said, quote, but he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions being taken. And that's when he said in that interview to MSNBC, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel. It's contrary to what Israel stands for, and I think it's a big mistake. So I'm wondering what he means by it's contrary to what Israel stands for. Because clearly Israel as a state stands for the right to exist. Israel as a state stands for the right to protect its citizens. Israel as a state reserves the right to wage war against an enemy that's seeking its destruction. So having said all of that, the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that his policies are not private policies, but that they represent the vast majority of the citizens of Israel. And of course, the president sent a mixed message to Israel on its plans to attack Hamas and Rafah. Biden was calling it a red line, but also said that the United States will not abandon the Jewish state. And in an effort to get more aid to Gaza, the United States has pledged to build a temporary pier. And a United States ship departed from Virginia with equipment to build that structure. And that's probably not a good idea. So 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. So many of you, you might be familiar with Islam. You may not be familiar with Islam. You may be familiar with the observance of Ramadan, or you may not. But again, in Islamic societies and religion, it's a holy month that's set aside for mandatory fasting, required fasting. And so observance of Ramadan is one of the five pillars of Islam. And by fasting during the month, Muslims believe that they earn spiritual rewards and that they're able to draw closer to Allah. So Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, which is, again, like the Hebrew calendar, it's lunar based. And based on the region, either astronomical calculations or moon sightings mark the beginning of the month. And so in Saudi Arabia, it marked the beginning by the appearance of the crescent moon in the sky, which ends with the next new moon. So Ramadan officially commences when a Muslim imam announces it. And during the month of Ramadan, Muslims seek the mercy and attention of Allah by fasting from dawn to sunset. And so Muslims abstain from food, drink, smoking, and marital activities, if you will, during the daylight hours. And it's said that the good works done during the month of Ramadan will result in a multiplication of the normal reward for the same works performed in other months. So in their way of thinking, in the month of Ramadan, it sort of multiplies goodness. And so for that reason, generosity and charity increase among Muslims during the month of Ramadan. And so Muslims are also encouraged to read the entire Quran during Ramadan and then to recite special prayers. And Ramadan ends with the feast of Eid al-Fitr, the festival of breaking the fast. And so the word Ramadan comes from an Arabic word, Ramida, which means intense scorching heat or dryness. So it's believed among the followers of Islam that Ramadan burns away a person's sin with good deeds. And so the Muslim seeks to suppress everything sinful in themselves, putting away vice, putting away bad behavior, and then a desire to show their dedication to Allah and their hope that he'll be merciful to them. So the word Islam, of course, means submission, and the posture of obedience and self-denial during the month of Ramadan is the ultimate act of a Muslim's submission to Allah, which again brings up a question. Well, what does the Bible say about fasting? What are the Jews and the Christians' obligations concerning fasting? And why don't Christians fast the way Muslims fast? Well, I'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. 303-873-1935. I'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program. The number is 303-873-1935. 1935 if you'd like to call me on the program with your question about God, the historical Jesus, with your questions about the Bible. And I was talking a little bit about the Feast of Ramadan in the Muslim tradition, and both Muslims and Christians fast, but the purpose for fasting is different. So in Islam, the fast is made in order to keep one of the five pillars. So a Muslim is obligated to fast during Ramadan. And the Bible teaches that fasting doesn't necessarily merit God's favor. It doesn't increase your position in paradise. So Christians fast for other reasons. Now, I've heard it said that it is the practice of denying the flesh in order to feed the spirit. So that's a broad category. You deny your flesh in order to feed your spirit. But other ways of thinking about it would include to demonstrate satisfaction. You know, in Matthew chapter 4, verse 4, Jesus says, it's written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Also, fasting is an act of humility before God. In Daniel chapter 9, verse 3, it says, when Daniel's praying, it says he turned his face to the Lord, seeking him by prayer and pleas for mercy with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. In other words, again, a concentrated effort of focus. So you refrain from doing one thing in order to do another thing. But also fasting was a part of the Bible in the sense of setting aside time to request help from the Lord. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 16, it says, David therefore sought God on behalf of the child. This was the child that was lost, if you will, or born either premature or very, very ill with his unfortunate incident with Bathsheba. And it says, and David fasted and went in and lay all night on the ground. So there were episodes like Esther. It says, go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young woman will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So, again, it was a focused moment to intercede. So, also, some people will fast in order to seek God's will. It says in the book of Acts, in chapter 13, it says, while they were worshiping the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I've called them. Then after fasting and praying, they laid their hands on them and sent them out. So in Jonah, the fast was to turn from sin. In Luke chapter 2, it was to worship God without distractions. In verses 36 through 38, it says, and there was a prophetess, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, having lived with her husband 7 years from when she was a virgin, and then as a widow until she was 84. She didn't depart from the temple, worshiping with fasting and prayer night and day. And coming up at that very hour, she began to give thanks to God and speak of him to all who were waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem. So those are some of the reasons for Christians who have fasted. And of course, we know that Jesus fasted. 303-873-1935, perhaps his most famous episode of fasting, is the 40 days. It says at the beginning of his public ministry before his great miracles and teaching, he fasted 40 days. And you'll remember the devil afterward tested Jesus when he was weak with hunger. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And again, the devil took him up to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, "All these things I'll give you if you fall down and worship me." And Jesus said to him, "Go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." And you'll remember the devil left. And the Bible says that angels came and ministered to him. And again, Jesus issues a warning against prideful fasting and don't fast to appear religious before men and don't fast to earn forgiveness of sin. So there were a Pharisee was one of the religious leaders. They belonged to a fundamental sect of Judaism. It says a Pharisee was standing by himself, and he prayed this way: "God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even, well, like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector standing afar off wouldn't even lift up his eyes to heaven to beat his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.' I tell you, the man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted." And, of course, Jesus taught that following God's will bring more satisfaction than eating. Remember, his disciples said, "Master, eat." He said to them, "I have food which you don't know about," or "you do not know." And therefore, the disciples said to one another, "No one brought him anything to eat." Jesus said to him, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." And of course, Jesus said, "I'm the bread of life, and the person who comes to me will never go hungry." Now, obviously, he's got to be talking about a spiritual hunger, because he's not talking about a physical hunger, because Christians get hungry. Jesus said, "He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you also have seen me and do not believe. For that all that the Father gives me shall come to me, and the one who comes to me I will in no wise cast out." Jesus said in John chapter 6, he says, "For I came down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all which he has given me, I shall lose nothing, but should raise it up again on the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes on him should have everlasting life. And I will raise him up on the last day." So, there was a wise man who spent years of his life serving Muslims in the Middle East. And he shared his reason for fasting. He says, "I want fasting to be an honest statement of what's important to me. I want the simple act of going without food for a while to remind me that spiritual and eternal things are more important than temporal things." 303-873-1935. Love to hear from you. 303-873-1935. I'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program. Happy to take your call. I want to get to an article that's posted at Christian Headlines about John MacArthur. But before I do, there was another question that came up about you know, what's allowable for a Christian. It was an interesting question about, is it allowable for a Christian to eat halal food, which is interesting, and I'll get to that. But 303-873-1935. There are two Arabic words. One is, and I don't know Arabic by any stretch of the imagination, but I am familiar with certain words like haram, that means that which is forbidden, and halal, which means that which is permissible. And so it's always a good thing for me anyway to try to learn new words and understand their meaning in their context. So the word halal means permissible in Arabic. It refers to food or objects or actions that are allowed in Islam. So certain things, foods, objects, certain things are allowed, certain things are not allowed. So among other things, halal meat must be killed with a sharp knife and then drained of blood. No carnivorous animals, birds of prey, or meat contaminated with non-permissible substances can be used. This in and of itself is a kind of a healthy way. It is a healthy way of preparing meat. And so, as you can imagine, there are certain aspects of kosherim or kosher with the Jews and halal with Arabs that lends itself to a healthy way of preparing certain foods and eating those foods. So the problem comes when Allah's name is pronounced over the meat during the butchering process. So some interpret this to mean the animal is sacrificed to a false god, an idol, which yet begs another question. Is Allah the Old Testament God of the Bible? Is Allah the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph? Is Allah the God of the Bible or a false god? So that's a different question, and I'll maybe talk about that later. But 303-873-1935 is my number. So nearly 2,000 years ago, Paul wrote to the church in Corinth regarding the permissibility of eating meat sacrificed to idols, because the Corinthians also struggled with this issue. In Corinth, as in many Roman cities, the only meat available in markets was that which had been sacrificed to a pagan idol. Now, the way I think about that is, imagine you go to King Soopers or Safeway, and you're in the deli section or you're in the meat section, and you see a meat that was offered to Zeus or Dionysius or, you know, some other pagan god. Now, imagine you're in the deli section and you see meat offered to Allah. Now, it is a little bit different in the sense that in pagan cultures, they would literally invite the deity to inhabit the sacrifice. So Paul told the Corinthian Christians that a false idol is nothing. It has no authority. It didn't create the animal or provide the owner with it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 4, it says, therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence and that there is no God but one. And so the point then becomes not that the food or the idol it was sacrificed to, but concern for other people. And so mature Christians realize that food sacrificed to idol or not is a neutral entity, and believers have freedom in Christ to eat or refrain from eating. So I think the way that I would think about it is believers are free to eat or refrain from eating. Jesus says it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out of your heart. Freedom is useless, though, Paul argues, without love. And if eating meat sacrificed to idols is harmful to another believer, then we make an effort to avoid it. So many of the poorest in Corinth could only afford to eat meat in the context of a pagan ritual. To them, meat was equated with their previous life. Those weaker brothers were not yet free of the religious connotation that meat carried. Therefore, a stronger brother indulging in meat eating could entice the weaker into an action that he believed was wrong and would be therefore sin. In what sense? Because if in your heart, if you violate your conscience, that's a problem. But whoever has doubts, Paul writes, is condemned if he eats because he's not eating from faith. 303-873-1935. That's the number, 303-873-1935. Let's see who's up. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Gino. I just want to compliment you. Every time you have Professor Grotius on, I really enjoy those shows. Yeah, but the show you did recently, where you guys were talking about music, that was really, really a great show. And
he loves jazz, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He's a big fan.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you know, all three of us, we come from that classic rock era, and after I became a believer, and I was 15 at the time, Rush was just getting started, and they came out with an album called Farewell to Kings, and you guys were talking about how God could even speak through secular music at times.
Right.
And I don't know if you have ever heard the song Xanadu, but if you haven't, every time I listen to it, it just reminds me of what it says in Revelations about how, you know, the world says peace, peace, but you know, Christ is coming. And, so anyway, this intro starts out with this hypnotic state of you're walking in a heavenly forest. But in the background of the music, you hear it building and building and building. And then the guitar comes in, and then all of a sudden, it just kicks your teeth in. And if you get a chance to listen to it, it's just it really touches my soul about how the unbelieving world is going to get so caught off guard, you know. And but you know, you guys are talking about the richness of the music that's lost due to the digitizing of it, and that is right. So true. My gosh, you know. Diamond on vinyl, there's nothing like it. And it's too bad that we've got a couple of generations that don't understand.
Well, there seems to be a revival in vinyl. That's, I mean, my
son
and my children and their children are seemingly have a revival. And I am not familiar with that song, but I'm familiar with the poem that it's based on. And Xanadu did Kubla
right.
Khan from Stately
right.
Pleasure Dome's Decree, and
if, right.
And so yeah, it's interesting because Doug talked about the Bible, talking about beauty, and what's, you know, something that's lovely and beautiful, that there's something inside of us that desires to make to worship, if you will.
Oh yeah, very much so. But if you get a chance to listen to the studio version of it, Farewell to Kings is the name of the album. It's awesome.
All right. Now I've got it. When I go to the antique gallery, I got to look for the vinyl version of Rush's.
Yep. Farewell to King Xanadu. Yeah, it's a great intro. One of the best intros I've ever heard.
Hey, thank you for your call. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm getting distracted by the music call, but hey, 303-873-1935. I might come back to it, but I wanted to talk just real briefly about the article that was posted at where was it? Was it at ChristianHeadlines.com about John MacArthur? And hopefully I can find it, but 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. And while I'm looking for the article, you know, we talked a little bit about Oppenheimer, the movie. It won 7 Oscars. I read part of the book, Kai Bird's The American Prometheus. It won a Pulitzer Prize in 2005. But Oppenheimer won the Best Director, Christopher Nolan, Best Actor, Cillian Murphy, Best Supporting Actor, Robert Downey Jr., who, of course, didn't play Iron Man. But it also, for film editing, score, cinematography, and one reviewer explained its appeal. They called the film very much a movie of the moment, a feel-bad hit for our feel-bad age, perfectly calibrated to capture the imagination of an audience perpetually scanning the horizon for the bloom of some new mushroom cloud, unquote. What an interesting thing. It's that growing sense of impending doom. And Jim Dennison at the Dennison Forums says, he says, we don't have to look far to find such clouds in the news. He says, today marks the 4th anniversary of the World Health Organization's declaration of COVID as a pandemic. Now, producer Jim, think about that. It was 4 years ago today that the World Health Organization announced we have a pandemic. And remember, the whole world started to shut down. Mask mandates, distancing, the search, if you will, for a vaccine, and then the never-ending claims of what you could and couldn't do. Jim Dennison points out the global death count from the virus, even though for many of us we've stopped talking about it, now exceeds 7 million. And he is citing the World Health Organization's data center. And according to the number of COVID deaths reported to the World Health Organization. Now, whether or not those numbers are skewed or how they were collected, all of that is interesting to me. But 303-873-1935, that's the number if you want to join me on the program. And the largest wildfire in Texas history seem to have found the origin. It wasn't created by Israeli laser beams. Apparently, it was ignited by a power company's facility. Now, according to some estimates, it burned a larger area than the entire state of Rhode Island. 2 people dead, thousands of animals dead, more than 1 million acres burned. Jim Dennison on his website has written a paper on it. He calls it the Texas wildfires, what we know and what we don't know. So think about that. Today marks the anniversary of COVID, largest wildfire, proliferation of AI, computing, crypto mining, electric vehicles. But also, according to mental health workers, there's an epidemic of anxiety, loneliness, and what experts are calling technology-induced isolation. And that's why you're hearing on the news clippets that the Pew Research is talking about how when people put their phone away, they experience a renewed sense of peace. Jim Dennison writes, but I think an even deeper force is at work in our culture. He says, one to which the gospel can uniquely respond with the hope we long to embrace. He says, in an article published Saturday, New York Times contributing opinion writer Christopher Caldwell analyzes America's shift from a consensual, objective, moral worldview to a relativism that's unable to distinguish facts from wishes. He says, using our fracturing response to Russian aggression in Ukraine as an example, he writes, quote, fighting a war based on values requires good values. At a bare minimum, it requires an agreement on the values being spread. And the United States is further from such agreement than it's ever been in history. Further, even than on the eve of the Civil War. At times, it seems there are no national principles, only partisan ones, with each side convinced that the other is trying not just to run the government, but to capture the state. Now, what an interesting thing that is, because the idea isn't just simply an ideological division, but rather, well, it's an ideological division that seems almost, dare I even use the word that George Barna uses, insurmountable. He basically said, and I've repeated this point from his American World Inventory, that we're divided to the point where I believe Americans have lost the capacity to develop a united perspective on who America is and how we can move forward. It's amazing. He says there was a day when our national principles were clear and compelling, as set forth in the Declaration of Independence. Truth is self-evident, not subjective. All people are created equal by God, not the product of chaotic or evolutionary coincidence. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, which the government does not bestow but protects. We each have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, a claim that contradicts the culture of death embraced by abortion and euthanasia advocates. And so, can we find our way back? Hey, if you'd like to join me on the program, 303-873-1935. I'll be back taking your calls, answering your questions.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.